This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Hello, everybody. This is Wells Tech, a show about technology and ministry and where those two meet. It is Tuesday, June 24th, 2014, and it's 4 o'clock Central Time. And joining me as usual over there in, I almost said Sleepy Eye.
New Ulm, Minnesota.
New location, new town. I don't know how new it is, but New Ulm, Minnesota.
Hi, it's Sally. Me. It's Sally Draper, and I'm here to tell you that 4 p.m. on Tuesday means I'm thinking about what's for supper. All of a sudden, I'm like, maybe we should include that in our podcast planning, what's for supper. I bet the people watching are wondering what's for supper, too. So.
Yeah, that's like, you know, all those Twitter feeds you can follow, and you can get the dietary habits of a lot of different people. So.
Really interesting stuff. We're having lasagna, by the way, and garlic bread, so
we're
just to make you hungry.
Grill, which is really unusual for us. We rarely have steak, but we have some Omaha steaks. I think they were a gift back Christmas time. You know, they come in the, you know, the frozen packages that appear on your door in this big ice chest, and then we throw them in the freezer and we forget about them until about July. And then we get them out and say, this is a great day to grill. So.
Yeah, I would love to be grilling out, too. It's a pretty day here. We're past some monsoon rains and moving on with sunshine. So happy for that.
Good. Now, we are obviously midsummer and midsummer series. But the show must go on. And we felt that we'd want to have something to show for ourselves this summer, not just the same old run-of-the-mill shows we always run, but we'd be able to point at something and say, look what we did, and that is our wiki. And that is no small task, as we're finding out. We had a bunch of stuff. Some of it was useful and current, some of it not as much, so we're going through the process of weeding that out and then migrating all the way to a new platform. So if you've been with us the past couple weeks, you've noticed that we've talked about a number of different topics, including Bible apps, church-specific content, and now we are moving on to communication, Sally.
That's right. I'll just make a quick mention of the URL of the wiki site. It's wellstechwiki.gapps.wells.net, and there's actually even a link in the top of our show website. There's a W icon that'll get you right to the wiki. And so once you're there, you'll notice the sidebar has some of the main categories of the site. And you're right, Martin, we're just working our way down that list, and communications is what's coming up. We're going to divide that communication page up over several weeks because there's a lot of great stuff to talk about in the realm of communication. And I guess that makes sense that there's a lot to talk about there, because you can do the greatest job in the world of spreading the good news of Jesus Christ in many different ways through your church and school, but if you can't communicate it, it's not going to get you very far. Communication is kind of key to gospel ministry, and using technology tools isn't going to help you any if you aren't communicating well. So
exactly right. And at the top of that list is one of the most frequently asked questions that we get, and maybe more confusion surrounding around it than any other topic related to communication especially, and that's the whole issue of copyright. So we have whole copyright section there, and it's, I would say in general, it's fairly current. We have a couple of subpages there right now. One of them was more timely then than it is now, but there were NIV Bible guidelines. Well, I guess it still is current. How much of the Bible can you quote? How much can you put in print? What about using digital Bibles, those kinds of things? And we have a lot of different content there related to NIV Bible guidelines that we came across during our study of copyright.
And then there's a second page for copyright called Resources, and this is where we've just listed a whole ton of links to helpful copyright resources. Right off the bat, there's a link to a podcast episode we did real recently, Martin, called Are You Legal? And we had a copyright expert with us. It was Christine Laufer from Northwestern Publishing House. And that's a really great reference. I would recommend if anybody's interested. Good thing it's first on the list, because that's a really great place to start. But then there are just oodles of great copyright resources on this page, church-focused as well as for educators and using copywritten material for education purposes. The whole concept of fair use and that kind of thing is addressed on this page as well.
Yep. So, yeah, wealth of resources there. And again, this is a kind of a moving landscape, so it's important to stay up to date. And as you come across different materials that you think are valuable, this is the place to put those, and it's fairly easy to do that. There's a request an account link at the top. If you don't already have one, Sally will get you do a login, and then jump in here, hit the edit button, a little pencil icon that appears at the top, and away you go.
Yep. Moving on, there was a section in the old wiki that had to do with doing presentations. So that's one way that we communicate, is that we stand up in front of a group of people and present something. And obviously our pastors and teachers do that on a regular basis when they're teaching various classes. But there are other opportunities to do presentations as well. So there's a nice section of resources here related to presentations, including audience considerations, handouts for seminars, and recommended reading.
And I just updated the recommended reading with the readings that I have some of our MLC summer class students take, MLC online class, I shouldn't say summer class. So I teach a class called Dynamic Classroom Presentations, and our actual textbook presentation, Zen, is listed there along with some other recommended reading. Plus the entire reading list for the class I've quoted, or I linked there. It's a Deagle list that you can get all the resources that I'm recommending that they use for the class. So lots of good stuff there, and if you have your own, obviously you can add that too. So presentations are important, but also promotion, and that's kind of the final section here that we're going to talk about today for in this communications area, and that is promotion. And we've got three different categories there. Obviously, newsletters are one, and we hope to have, you know, templates there and maybe tips and tricks for publishing newsletters and mailing lists and how to do that effectively. But obviously, one of the growing areas of interest for a lot of congregations is going to e-newsletters. There is a cost savings, of course, and a lot of people are desirous of less mail in their mailbox and getting these things digitally. So we talked about things there like MailChimp and some of these mailing services, Constant Contact. We hope those kind of go in there, as well as templates and other things that we can help with that kind of communication mechanism.
Right. The whole conversion process was taking what was in the old wiki. And in the old wiki, there was just information about MailChimp. We had actually dedicated a show to it way back when, episode 89, ancient history now. But I did update all the links to various help on the MailChimp site. So for MailChimp, we should be fairly well covered. But I'd love it if someone would add to this page and share their knowledge about Constant Contact and help to grow this page so it's not just MailChimp-centric, because I know MLC, for instance, uses Constant Contact, and it's a great competitor and in that same space as MailChimp, and I'm sure has a lot of excellent features as well. So we'd like to get it included here as well and can kind of change up the layout. Right now we're just converting, but keeping it up to date by adding more MailChimp. There's also a few examples and links to e-newsletters, so you can see what other people are doing with their e-news. And if you want to share what you're doing in terms of e-newsletters, send us a link. Better yet, get an account on the wiki and add it yourself.
Very good. So that is our
almost.
Oh, we got another one yet?
We do. Under promotion, there's one more category. It's called surveys.
Surveys, right.
Yeah, and what we used this area to house so far in the wiki is time and talent surveys, really well done, that congregations use to poll their members to understand what their various gifts are, to help them explore what their gifts are and contribute to the congregation in that way. And so there's actually some Word document versions of these time and talent surveys that you could take and modify to use in your own congregation. So if you're looking for that kind of thing, check out the surveys link. And if there are other time and talent surveys or other types of surveys that you're doing in your congregation, please do share them there. And I guess one thing we hadn't mentioned specifically is that there's a way to upload files yourself. So if you have a Word document or a PDF that you want to upload there, you can do that as well.
While you're there, Sally, I see at the bottom of the screen there is a comments field, and we've turned that on for some of these pages. And because this isn't necessarily a traditional wiki, it's not wiki software, it's Google Sites, we're trying to replicate some of that functionality. And one of the cool things about a wiki is that you can have some running dialogue, and this comments section would be the place to have that. So if you want to throw out an idea, discuss something, suggest a resource, and you're not quite sure how it fits or whatever, use the comments section, and hopefully people will see that and be able to respond to it that are interested in that same topic.
And, you know, speaking of wiki features, there is an area here called Recent Site Activity, and there's a button at the top where you can subscribe to find out changes on the site. So if you're interested in getting notification as things change, and you can do that at a page level, I believe, as well. I take that back. I'm not sure if you can do it at a page level or not, but certainly at a site-wide level, you can subscribe for changes.
Always good stuff that could come out of that. So that would be useful for you.
There you go. At a page level, if you're logged in, you would have the gear icon, and there is an option to subscribe to a particular page.
Just-in-time instruction. I love it.
Yeah, nothing like it.
All right. So that's a wrap on our discussion topic related to the wiki and communication section. We will actually pick up next week with, I believe, social media, and what's the other topic?
All the different content management systems that are out there, the popular content management systems for your website, so they're all part of communication planning.
That'll play in well for my pick this week, so just a little thing to whet your appetite there. Let's move on to our tips of the week, and you might remember if you were listening or watching last week, my tip of the week, or my, I forget whether it's tip or pick, but Twitter lists was something that I talked about in a little bit more detail last week. I'm going to keep with that theme this week, Sally, and talk about playlists on YouTube. Same kind of concept. We have been talking about playlists every week now at the end of the show because we're trying to build up playlists for the show that people can use and enjoy, whether that's Wells Music or different educational videos or whatever. But YouTube playlists have a lot of different purposes. So I found a couple good resources. Let me just share that for those of you that are watching. There's a bunch of good help resources on YouTube themselves. One that I found was just entitled Create, Edit, and Delete Playlists, and they give you kind of a step-by-step how to work with playlists, including whether you're using the desktop version of YouTube or whether you're on Apple or an Android device. And there's lots of flexibility that you have with playlists as far as editing and reordering them. There are I can switch over to my playlist list. So once you are on your own YouTube site or your account when you're logged in, and you can go to a lot of different areas there, but if you are on the page, how do I get back? Here we go. It's on the little button here. Depends, I think, on how wide your screen is, but you've got this little drop down. And on the left, you have all your playlists, which you can drag around. And if you click on playlists, then you see them all. And there's different kind of playlists you can create. You can create totally private ones, like I've done. I have a Wells Tech one that's private. I have one called Instructional that's private. And then I have some public ones, and there's ones that are called unlisted. But you can create as many of these playlists as you want, and there you can tag it public, unlisted, or private. The way I use these, and I just cleaned this out, it was getting a little moldy, and I'll start refreshing these again, are just things that I come across on YouTube that I want to save for later, maybe. I don't want to forget them, so I don't actually add them as a link to anything. I just want to save them as a playlist, and then I can come back to the playlist. So if I find something that might be good for a podcast, I'll put it on Wells Tech. If it's something instructional in nature that I want to come back and visit, here's one that I've added for some programming. You can do all kinds of things. And there are lots of different applications for playlists. Sometimes it's just tuck them away, like I said. Sometimes it's to share. I mean, you can share playlists like we do on the podcast. I've seen teachers use these as pre- and post-class kind of background things where they just play either educational videos, TED Talks, or just music videos for the kids. Or during free time or during a time when they're supposed to be working or whatever. You can also embed playlists, so these can go on your website if you have a series of things that you maybe want people to play through. They could be instructional videos or inspirational videos or a series of sermons or Bible classes, whatever. Those all can be put together and put on a playlist. So actually a very powerful tool that I think Google has done a pretty nice job with and done some nice documentation as well.
I use Playlist as well, Martin, and I think they're really great. My kids would like your pick because they they use Playlist when they're with their friends all the time. You've got to have your YouTube videos like running in the background. That's their background noise. Typically, it's Minecraft music videos. Go figure.
Now, I should differentiate, because some people, I think, get confused. It's the difference between playlists and subscriptions. Subscriptions are kind of like following, and when you go to your subscriptions, you see any new video that has been added. Now, playlists can do that, too. You can configure them to actually go out and look for tags and different things that appear in titles and bring them into a playlist automatically. That's in this document that I was sharing before, too. So you can build playlists, kind of like smart playlists on the fly, just based on what videos have been uploaded with the criteria that matches whatever you're looking for, rather than subscribing to one person or company that you get all of them. Here you can be very specific. Just show me, videos with this particular tag, whether it's Lutheran or church or math or whatever it is. So,
excellent. All right,
my turn
for a tip, and I'm going to share some real practical tips in relation to editing Google Sites. I'm learning more and more about Google Sites as I work through the Wells Tech Wiki, and I had just a huge revelation the other day when I realized that the gear icon that's part of that's basically your access to all your edit features of the site has some little keyboard shortcuts available over on the right next to the main commands. In light gray, you can see keyboard shortcuts that'll do the same thing for you. So I looked it up. There's also a help document that I can point you to, and we'll have a link in the show notes to a whole list of keyboard shortcuts for working with Google Sites. And I did note it's a feature that's part of user settings, whether you have that enabled or not. So some of the keyboard shortcuts are as simple as typing a single letter, like a U to get to page settings or whatever it may be. And so you have to actually turn that on, or else you might confuse yourself if you aren't used to the fact that keyboard shortcuts are going to pop up that easily. So check out that help page if you need help with that. And as if one tip of the week wasn't enough, I have a second one, because I also learned how to add a fave icon. And fave icons show up on your tabs of your site, and so I was able to put a Wells Tech icon on the Wells Tech Wiki. And to do that, you basically go to, I found a help page, and I'll have a link to that, but if you go to your managed site, which is kind of the brains of your whole Google site, there's actually an area for attachments. And this is really nice because you may want to move files that you've uploaded to another area of the site, and you can do that in this attachments area. But the key to adding a fave icon is to name your fave icon faveicon.ico, which is a kind of a standard naming scheme for fav icons, and to upload it at the root level of your Google site, and it will immediately magically show up for you as your fav icon on the whole site. So two little tricks for your Google site to customize it and help with shortcut commands. That's my tips of the week.
With our little venture into Google Sites as a wiki replacement, I've got a new appreciation for sites in general. I had a really negative impression when they first launched, and we tried to put one up for our church coordinating council, and I think it was in general a disaster. It was very inflexible. They've made so many nice improvements that I think it's worthy of uses in all kinds of applications, including maybe congregational intranets, not to mention committees and whatnot, or certainly on the class, on the school side, something that could really be leveraged for a lot of different applications. So.
Excellent.
Let's move on to picks.
I'm going to jump into my pick of the week, which is slideflicker.com. And this came up because actually, my sons were helping with Vacation Bible School at our church last week, and one of them's job was to be the photographer for the week. So we ended up creating a Flickr account to put all the pictures on from Vacation Bible School. And Flickr doesn't make it easy any longer to embed a slideshow on your own website. So I was looking for a way to embed, and I found this site, a third-party site. And you basically just type in your username. So let's see if I can do this. So this is your Flickr username. And then you have the ability to get all your pictures or different sets or tags or favorites. So if I were to look at the sets tab, then I can see all the different sets that we created. There's a kind of a master set for the whole week of Vacation Bible School, or you can get a set for a particular day. So once you select whichever set you want, you can give it some more parameters like the width and height that you want to embed, a slideshow description, and then you can just hit the preview button and you'll see a preview of your Flickr slideshow, and the embed code is available for you to just grab right there at the bottom of that preview window. So it'll start playing right away, and you can see different images. You have a little controller where you can jump to a specific image if you want to, whatever it is. And then, like I said, the embed code's just sitting there for you. So a super easy way to embed Flickr slideshows.
Great. This was really a need. I was really bummed when Flickr really made that really hard. First of all, they kind of obscured it, and then I think it's totally gone. And the reason that they do that is, you know, they want people to come to their site and see the ads and whatever. So it's unfortunate that they did that, but it's fortunate for us that we've got tools like this to take its place. And I assume it's totally free?
It is free.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. My pick of the week is a document written and made available by Concordia Technology Solutions. And if anybody is in the market for let me get to the right screen here. For a church management software solution, I've always highly recommended Concordia and their products, either Shepherd Staff or now their Church 360 products. And their Church 360 members product is the one that provides member management, attendance, and contributions management. And they put together kind of a nifty document. Now, you know, some would say, why are they? The document, I should say, is called, it's a white paper, 106 questions to ask before you buy a church management software. Some would think, well, that's fairly self-serving because they're going to skew the questions toward maybe their software solution if the answers aren't correct. And I would say there's very little of that in the 106 questions. I think these are very valid questions to ask when you're considering purchasing or switching church management software solutions. Let me show you a little bit of the document. It's free, 106 questions, and they kind of break it down by different areas. So one called decisions, and there's some basic questions in there about what is your budget, time frame, what do you like about your current software, what don't you like, etc. Who needs to be involved in making the decision, who gets the final say, just kind of basic stuff. And then they talk about the users, who's going to use the software, some general questions, membership specific questions. Does it limit the number of records that can be kept for individuals? If your church grows, can you easily upgrade the software? So you can see a little bit of you know, their products behind here, but I think these are good general questions to ask about any purchase of a church management software solution, and you can't beat the price. And these are very quick, even though there's 106 of them. There's basically one question and then a couple sentences for answer that gives a little bit more information. So any of you that are kind of thinking about switching or thinking about adding one to your church office, this would be a good white paper to download and share with the committee that is responsible for that. So that is my pick of the week.
I think the fact that they just came up with 106 questions proves or may enlighten people as to what a big decision it is that they're making.
It is. You don't want to you don't want to change course very often.
Exactly.
In this particular thing. So.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on, Sally.
Well, we have community feedback next, Martin, and we heard from an anonymous contributor this week with a Google Apps for Education plug.
Yes, our anonymous contributor who heard from her principal about a great product. Let me share my screen again that he has started to use or is at least very interested in. That's called Pear Deck. The title is simply Engage Every Student in Your Google Classroom. So it's Google-centric, and it's in beta yet, so this has not been launched, and it's not free, I'm getting the sense, either from reading it. But they say, Pear Deck makes it easy to plan and build interactive lessons directly from your Google Drive that promote active learning in the classroom. As students interact with the lesson, real-time data provides instructors the feedback they need to adapt teaching on the fly. So there's a series of step-by-steps. There's an introductory video, but essentially the concept is the teacher creates the lesson, the interactive lesson. It can be content, multiple choice, free response, drag and drop kinds of things, puts that up on the screen. But each of the computers in the hands of the students in, let's say, a one-on-one environment, they have a view of it as well, and they can interact with the content. And then the teacher has a view of what each student is doing and can kind of pick either in aggregate, so there's a collection of responses, whether there's multiple choice, or if there's an individual response that he or she would like to grab and share or kind of continue the conversation with. It's really kind of a screen, kind of a half screen sharing kind of approach, and can kind of custom tailor to a unique learning environment where it can be customized all within the context of Google Drive and Google Apps. Sally, it kind of strikes me as in our unconference we had a vendor there. Was it Epson?
No, it wasn't. And I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, me too. Where's Jason Schmidt when you need him? Movio, I forget what their name was. We'll have to look that up. But anyway, they had a solution there which was actually similar, but it was based on mobile devices where they could download an app and interact with the a quiz or a multiple choice question or a survey or whatever. This kind of does that in a Google Apps environment for a Chromebook or whatever it is interacting with the apps environment. So sounds like it's something worth investigating. If that sounds intriguing, go to PearDeck.com, and thanks for the contribution.
All right, moving on. This was the week for me to get questions about Ubiquiti remote, Wi-Fi access point.
Points, yes.
I don't know why I got remote in my mind. But anyway, Ubiquiti access points. At some point in the past, at multiple points in the past, we've talked about Ubiquiti products as being really reliable and strong Wi-Fi access points. And various schools throughout the Synod, I think even Asia Lutheran Seminaries adopted Ubiquiti products and are using them for Wi-Fi access points, and with good reason. They seem to be a really sound product. And so somewhere along the line, the Drapers decided they needed this this type of access point for their home network, and I made mention of that on the show, and for some reason I got two different questions about it this week. One just asking what we purchased, kind of a refresher on what it is we purchased. And so I'm showing an Amazon screenshot. We'll have a link in the show notes to the Ubiquiti Unify. It's a long-range access point that we purchased, currently priced at $88.95. It is not a router. These are access points. You still need a router on your network. This just basically allowed us to have really strong Wi-Fi throughout the house and in the backyard and out in the garage, and it's a really long-range product, so we're really pleased with it. Our access point before didn't reach to our second floor very well and that kind of thing, so the long range was what really got us. The second question I got was actually from Gil.
You only have one?
We only have one. We have it on the middle floor, but I can tell you, we have boys who like to do online gaming, very intense, media-rich gaming, and they have friends, and we'll have, well, we're the cool techie house anyway. Everybody has great internet reception when they're at our house on our Wi-Fi, so it's powerful stuff. The second question I got was actually from Gail Potratz. Martin, I don't know if I even shared this one with you, but she was looking for more of the logistics, the specifics of it. And in the course of kind of talking through that, my husband provided some really great information that I didn't know about Wi-Fi standards and things. So I just want to read a little bit from this explanation that he gave us. If you're currently using the wireless standard that's 802.11G, the main thing is to key in on the letter G, that has a maximum Wi-Fi bandwidth of only 54, is it megabits per second?
Right.
So if you go to the wireless standard N, it's 802.11N, it goes between 300 and 600 megabits per second. So your access point could be throttling back the bandwidth that's coming into your house, I guess, is what he's saying. If you're on that G standard, then it might be worth upgrading to a new access point. But if it's the bandwidth coming to your house isn't strong enough, a new access point isn't going to improve that. I guess that was the big thing. And then the other reason perhaps to consider a new access point was the long-range capability that I talked about, the fact that we could get it, you know, from a longer distance. And apparently the N has a longer range than the G as well. So, again, another reason to go with an N access point, if that makes sense.
And most of them are in these days, and the Ubiquiti, I assume, is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's some other advantages we've talked about in the past. You have the ability to have a guest network. You have the ability to manage your entire network through a web interface, or the ability to log into your server, and it's kind of a web interface. And it's really easy to manage, and like you said, you can have a lot of users on it, and it's just a good product. So I got to look at that. I've got some corners of my house that aren't real well served, so it might not be a bad idea if I extend it with one of those guys. So
we've been really happy with it,
basically, to run these. So it's not just the cost of the access point. You have to hook this up to a computer. So
All right, a little bit more correspondence that we received this week, Martin, was from our Nexus 7. Tablet winner. We gave away a Nexus 7 and an Apple TV at the end of May, and the Nexus 7 went to listener Tim Gablehouse. How did I do?
Worried about his last name that you screwed up his first name.
I can't say Tim, right. And he even excused us. He said in his email, it doesn't matter how you pronounce my name.
Anybody that gives him a Nexus 7 can call him anything you want.
Exactly. So our buddy George out there that won the Nexus 7, anyway, he was transitioning from an iPad 1. That was his current tablet. And you can imagine that it was probably pretty slow. iPad 1s weren't designed for the current operating systems to be optimized and run as fast as you'd like them to, I'm sure, with iOS 7 and stuff. So I'm sure that was wonderful to have a speedier tablet and speedier response time. But he wrote to us about some of the other aspects of his transition, one of which was, interestingly, he didn't have to spend very much money rebuying apps. As it turned out, a lot of the investment that he had on the iOS side were for apps that now either he doesn't use any longer or they're free now. So over time, he's refined it down to a smaller set of apps that aren't as costly. So it wasn't really a cost factor to transition to Android from the iOS marketplace. And his biggest find was an app called Aereo, Martin, if I'm pronouncing that right. It's A-E-R-E-O. And it works with his Chromecast. So he doesn't have to turn on a computer connected to his TV. He can use the Nexus 7 tablet to control the Chromecast. And that was just really a big find for him. He says,
I'm going to try that. I'm not aware of that one.
Yeah. Two areas provided me with challenges, email and podcast. For email, he ended up going with Cloud Magic, but he didn't like the way it functioned. So then he tried Aquamail, and that let him configure it the way he wants. So he brought the pro version of Aquamail. And then for podcast, he chose Pocket Cast. And it syncs nicely between the iPhone and the Nexus 7. So he's still using an iPhone, an iOS device, for his telephone. So he was happy with the way it synced, even better than it synced between his iPad and his iPhone. So he says the jury's still out for the 7-inch versus 10-inch form factor. It can be hard to read email on the 7-inch screen, though the 7-inch tablet is easier to carry around and even fits in my pocket mostly. So for controlling the Chromecast, the 7-inch is perfect. So pros and cons going to a smaller form factor. Anyway, Tim, we appreciate you taking the time to share all that feedback and an interesting perspective as you were transitioning between the different operating systems. Thanks for that.
And Craig, congratulations again. And thank you for your contributions to the show.
Absolutely. And then finally, a couple of links from our DIGO site. We have a DIGO hashtag, or a DIGO group, I should say, Wells Tech group, where anyone can share links with us easily using DIGO. Pastor Tim Wagner shared a document called Merging Info from Google Forms to PDF Document and Sending via Email. And he gave us a good explanation. He said you can set Google to notify you when a form has been submitted. So if you're using Google Forms, it writes to the spreadsheet. You get a little email that says a new submission happened. But it doesn't tell you the content of that submission. You have to go look at the spreadsheet to see that. So this describes a script that you can use, which will arrange the content in a format, create a PDF document, and email the PDF to you with the form submission. So you can actually see it in the email that you receive. The final step apparently deletes that temporary file, but he said he left that off, and he also has an archived Google Doc with the submission. So he said it's a great way to take care of registrations and things that you receive using Google Forms. So appreciate the link, and you guys can check out the article if you want the specifics on how to set that up, what script to use, and that kind of thing.
Yep.
And then finally, one last one submitted to our DIGO group, and that was from yours truly, from me. I'll do a quick screen share for those that are watching the video, but not a whole lot to see here. It's an article that I came across from the Grow in Grace website. Grow in Grace is continuing education for called workers through Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, and they recently posted an article about getting back to the original languages, and they're linking to a calendar that is geared toward improving your Greek and Hebrew translation skills. So it gives you brief daily readings. It's easy to use. Links also help you with the Greek and Hebrew. So the calendar is actually in Google Calendar format, one of our favorite things, Martin. So you can easily just click the button for Google Calendar and add it to your own personal list of calendars if you want. And then for each day, there's a list of readings from the Step Bible and from Scholar's Gateway, which you can click on and get to the Greek and Hebrew, I guess, maybe in a side-by-side fashion or whatever. So read more about it. You guys that are scholarly in that way will appreciate and understand better their description of things, and hopefully it'll be a benefit to you.
Awesome. Thank you for contributing. If you would like to contribute yourself, it's easy to do. WellsTech@wells.net is our email address. WellsTech.wells.net is the show notes page with all kinds of links there to get involved. We mentioned Digo, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. Just leave a comment on the show notes page. You can do that as well, and we'll pick that up and share that with the rest of the folks. That's a neat thing that you could do to be a part of the show. I'm sure you have something to share. Just to put your thinking cap on and get online and do that. We already talked about next week. We'll be continuing our series. I did want to, and I didn't put this on the map, Sally, but I hope this is okay that we talk about this. We had another planning meeting for our Wells Tech Conference 2015. It's going to be happening July 9th through the 11th of next year in Waukesha at Country Springs Hotel and Conference. And for those of you watching at home, let me just share my screen. And the conference website is kind of up and running, gives you some of that information, the cost, and those kinds of things. We are opening up our call for presenters section. So basically what we're doing is we are inviting people from across the synod to submit a suggested topic that they would feel qualified to present at the conference. And one of the benefits of that is you get free access to the conference. You won't have to pay the conference fee to attend. You'll still have to get there and stay there and such. But we are looking for presenters in all kinds of areas, including Google Apps, social networking, video and audio network editing, computer networking, Bible software, planning, music technology, PowerSchool, productivity, security, all over all of these are listed on the site. And there's not a guarantee that you'll be selected, but we are opening this up for people who would like to come and present at the conference. So go to wells.net/WellsTechConf, and that'll get you to the Wells Tech Conference homepage, and it's a Google site, and you can take a look at the information there. We already have one of our keynotes lined up, and we're looking for presenters at this point, so please consider submitting your idea.
How exciting. I guess there's no going back now. We're going to do this thing next summer, huh, Martin?
Yes, we are going to do this thing, and I'm actually very excited about it. We have not done one of these in many, many years, and it's about time. So I'm expecting every Wells Tech listener to be there, and if you want to be there and present, then all the better.
Excellent. All right, it's on my calendar. I'll be there.
Okay. Featured video, what are we doing?
Special video this week is the Wells International Youth Rally happening down in Tennessee, and the featured band of Youth Rally this year is Koine. And Koine was commissioned to write a song specifically for presenting at Youth Rally, and they've released that song. We're going to have it embedded on our website. It's called Sacrifice with Shouts of Joy. It's an excellent music video and a beautiful song that you'll want to sing along, especially if you've got youth down there in Tennessee. Here's your chance to learn what they're going to be singing when they come home to you. So great timing, Koine, to release that and us to just catch a little bit of the joy that's going to be going on down there. I don't know, what, 2,000 kids gathering down there? Yeah. Quite a party.
Nice, yep. All right, that'll do it for this week. Thank you all for joining us, and please consider joining us next week. If you want to join the show live, you can always do that. We're right here, 4 o'clock, Tuesday afternoon, Central Time, and you can join by asking questions and contributing in whatever way you want, or just do it the old-fashioned way, download it to your iPod, iPad, phone, watch it on the Internet. It's hard not to find us, Sally. We're everywhere.
So, we are.
so we do appreciate your listener and viewership, and hope you continue to do that. So blessings on your week, and see you next week.